Thank you, Laura. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. It's Tuesday afternoon. Talked with Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, how you doing?
I am good. I'm good, Darren. And I heard your interview with Coach Fitch, and I was going to agree with Willie that, you know, tried to avoid the engineering building. And this is actually, since we're in a coaching search, this is actually a kind of humorous story. I, in 4 years as a student and in my X year since I graduated, thought I'd never step foot in the engineering building. But I remember the one time I did, I was a sports editor for the Vanderbilt Hustler, and Jerry DiNardo had just taken over as head coach, and I tried to get a Q&A with him for the paper, and they kept rescheduling. I showed up at his office, and finally, he shook my hand. He said, "We're going for a walk." So I'm interviewing him, walking through McGugan. We get in a car. I think it was Rick George's car. They drive on campus, go into the engineering building. He says, "Wait here." He goes and talks to a dean for like 15 minutes, engineering building. Comes out. I interview him walking back to the car, in the car. Drive to another part of campus. I think it was like the English department or something, dean. So I interviewed Jerry DiNardo for the first time ever, bouncing around all these offices while he introduced himself to the deans on campus. So I guess I have been in the engineering office, engineering building.
Well, I'm with you guys. I had friends in school. We were there that they were in that that field, and they lived in that building, and I barely saw them.
Yeah, I know we're joking, but I always really had a lot of respect for Vanderbilt athletes who were engineers because that's a lot of work. I mean, certain majors are harder. Like, I was an economics major. I thought it was hard, but I didn't work nearly as hard as the engineering major. So that is a commitment there. So I did not know Ken Seals was the engineering major. So congrats. Sorry for that, kid.
Yeah, much respect for sure, because I think we also know, regardless of what college you went to, some people that started off as engineering majors and then changed their major quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been me.
Just real, yeah.
What was your level of surprise when the news came out that Derek Mason was no longer going to be the Vanderbilt coach?
I was surprised when it happened. I had actually thought about it some based on the performance on Saturday. And I said, you know what, if it wasn't inevitable before then, it's inevitable now. I thought with all of the attention that game received for the obvious reasons that they might – let things breathe a little bit and wait a week and maybe do it after the Georgia game. And then maybe there was a scenario there where Coach Mason coached the Tennessee game. You know, we've seen that in some cases where kind of a well-liked and respected coach stays on board. But obviously, and I applaud Candace Lee for doing it when she did. It was kind of an awkward time the day after the Missouri game. But she obviously has a plan going forward with signing day and all that. So they're not surprised it happened. Relatively surprised the day it happened.
So what do you think? What is the direction? We've all seen the list and the names that are floating out there. Do you have anything new to add? Do you think that is the list? Where are you at on what we've seen to this point, a couple days removed from that decision?
I think the list is usually those lists are pretty accurate.
Okay.
They're you know, the media comes up with them a lot of times, but they make sense. And I think that the names you've seen out there for Vanderbilt make sense. I think Will Healy, Jamie Chadwell, and Clark Lee, if I were running the search, would clearly be the three guys that I would focus on. I think there's a very attractive candidate pool this year. I think certain years there's a good group of up-and-coming coaches or hot coordinators or just other really solid coaches at Group of Five schools that you look at and say, yeah, they're good candidates for a Power Five job. In certain years, there aren't. I think Vanderbilt is in a great situation this year. Those three guys I mentioned, Lance Leopold at Buffalo was a very, very good coach who's done a great job at a school that, you know, has never won. Willie Fritz doesn't have a great record at Tulane, but they've had a ton of close, painful losses over the last years. He recruits very well. He runs a fun offense. So those three guys I mentioned, I think, would be really good. But then there's even another group out there that I think would be very attractive, too. So, I think Vanderbilt's in an advantageous position.
Who would be atop your list?
I can't decide. I think my list would be Jamie Chadwell, number one, from Coastal Carolina, Will Healy, 1B, and then Clark Lee. I think there's a lot I like about Clark Lee, the fact that he hasn't been a head coach would be the reason he'd be third on my list behind those two guys.
Okay, interesting. There is a lot of stuff out there swirling after Texas gagged away that game on Friday against Iowa State. There, I know you've seen it just like the rest of us.
Yep.
Urban Meyer to Texas, that Tom Herman is not going to be able to survive this. If indeed, well, let me just ask you, do you believe any of that? Do you believe that it's about time for Urban Meyer? He's been away long enough. It's time for him to scratch the itch. It's time for him to get back in for his 4 or 5 year run somewhere else before he gets out again.
It makes great sense for him to do it at Texas, if of all places, at coaching Florida, Ohio State, and Texas. Do I think he'll be the head coach there next year? No. I think there's too many, you know, I'm not sure that Tom Herman will be gone, and the fact that he does enjoy his work at Fox. There's no doubt about that. He's actually very, very good. I don't know about you guys, but I've actually changed my viewing habits from just when I do watch the pregame shows, it was always College Game Day. I now flip to Fox all the time because he's very, very good there. So I would love for it to happen just as a fan of the sport. It would be fun. But my guess is, and I always talk to you guys about this, I'm always wrong because I'm always way too conservative and say that coaches are going to get an extra year and they don't. But my guess is Tom Herman survives this.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Mark that down.
Okay.
Cold, you know, freezing cold takes, but I'll
put that one. Mark the tape. All right. So Michigan, boy, that was a nice follow up to their double overtime victory over Rutgers. They lose at home to Penn State, who hadn't won a game. How's this Jim Harbaugh stuff going to play out? Is he going to survive?
I don't think he gets fired, but I put it this way. I'm not nearly as confident in him being the head coach of Michigan as I was like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
There's that performance was alarming. Penn State was a team that was reeling just as badly as Michigan was, and you just didn't love – I didn't watch the entire game by any stretch.
They're pathetic. Flat out pathetic.
Yeah, they were very fortunate to beat Rutgers. I watched a lot of that game. They're better than that. And it's not all recruiting. You can't just say, I know they recruit well, but they have players. They should be better. And one side note is he has a top 10 recruiting class right now at Michigan. So it's not like things are, you know, Will Muschamp, change subject slightly, things were trending in the wrong direction, and his recruiting class was like in the 40s. Jim Harbaugh is still recruiting well there. But it is a messy situation. And as we talk about Vanderbilt and trying to find the right fit, was there a better fit than Harbaugh at Michigan in the past 10 years? Scott Frost at Nebraska and Harbaugh at Michigan were maybe the two best fits we've seen in college football searches over the past 5 or 10 years, and neither are going very well.
Talking to Mitch Light, who is with The Athletic, covers college football as one of the editors on their team. Also, Mitch, of course, for those that don't know, longtime sideline reporter at Vanderbilt, writer, historian. I'm going to give you that tag,
wow.
Mitch. So I want to ask for your historical context of Derek Mason's tenure now that it is over, because there's so many different ways to look at it. I would have thought that after about halfway through his first year, I wasn't sure he was going to make it through the second year, to be honest. He fired both coordinators after the first year. It was a total disaster. And this was right on the heels of the best run they've ever had as a football program. And I would have said, there's no way he's going to get this team to a bowl game. He got them to two. He beat Tennessee 3 straight times. So there's some good things on the ledger here. So where do you put that when you compare it to the other Vanderbilt coaches that you've seen?
He had one advantage that he had, and it's nothing against him, the 12-game schedule. He was afforded the opportunity to go to a bowl game at 6-6. Bobby Johnson had at least one, I think two good teams that went, relatively good teams that went 5-6. And if you added another non-conference game, maybe they go to a bowl game. Woody Woodenhofer's 1999 team goes 5-6 and a ton of close losses, painful losses. Maybe that team goes, 6-6 and goes to a bowl game there. So whenever you mention the bowl games by a head coach, you got to kind of look at the era in which they coach. And going back to Bobby Johnson, let's say one of those years he goes 5-6, he actually goes 6-6, and they go to a bowl game, and that speeds up recruiting. Because his best recruiting class, I believe, at Vanderbilt was the one like 2 years after his bowl. You know, that usually was the cycle. Once you go to a bowl game, maybe the next year and a half, you start recruiting better. But Derek Mason, no doubt, did some good things. He was very close to having two really good teams. Like his two teams that went to a bowl game, they were both 6-7 and 3-5. His 2016 team goes 3-5, lose four league games by 7 points or fewer. So that was really close to being maybe a 7 or 8 win team. And his 2018 team goes 6-7, lose by Notre Dame by 5, Florida by 10, Missouri by 5, had a good offense. So I think what ended up being the downfall were some recruiting misses and some bad luck at the quarterback position. I mean, I'm not going to boil it down to just that, but when Kyle Shermer left and then Andy Ludwig left, they were left last year with some really good offensive players and no quarterback, and, you know, struggled with the offensive coordinator position, I guess you could say. So I think he will be remembered fondly for going to those two bowl games and beating Tennessee three times. But another thing about that I think sticks out about Coach Mason's tenure, when his teams weren't good, they were really bad. Statistically, some of the worst teams at Vanderbilt that we've seen in the last 10 or 20 years. I think Bobby Johnson's teams that didn't have great records, you saw them steadily get more and more competitive. This last year and a half, the last 2 years under Derek Mason's tenure, were quite frankly two of the worst teams we've seen in recent history.
Good stuff. Yeah, it makes you wonder, had they not discovered and had Kyle Shermer, you know, how much different would it have looked? Because, as you said, the quarterback play was everything. They had horrendous quarterback play a big percentage of the time. But when he was in there, he made all the difference in the world.
Yep. I mean, it just goes to show you. Sometimes when you're in it, you don't appreciate how good a guy is. And I know he signed with the Broncos, but if he never plays in the NFL, it doesn't diminish that he was a really good college quarterback. You know, you go into last year and you're thinking, okay, well, you lose Shermer, but you got two other guys fighting for the job, and they could kind of, they're more mobile, they can do something. Well, no, it didn't work out that way. He was just a really good college quarterback, and I thought Andy Ludwig was a good, very good offensive coordinator as well. I thought losing him was very big, too.
Another historical question here for you. I watch Alabama. I mean, they're just blowing people away. And part of the thing that they were discussing on Saturday's broadcast is they might actually get the kid that broke his leg on the first play of the Tennessee game back before it's all over.
Waddle.
Waddle. They're not missing him at all. So where do you rank this Alabama team compared to the championship-level teams they've had before?
Yeah, that one's tough for me. They kind of all blend together. But offensively, clearly at or near the top. I mean, they've not missed a beat without Tua. This offensive line is really, really good. Obviously, they are not playing defense to the same level that some of those early Nick Saban era teams are, but no one really is. The defensive, you know, Nick Saban's even said that. You know, I'm sure you guys all have seen his comments lately. Nobody plays defense like that anymore. Just the numbers, the offensive numbers in college football, yards per game, yards per play, have taken off in the past 5 years. So they're kind of like LSU was last year. They're not great on defense. They're better than LSU was, but it doesn't really matter because they are just so explosive on offense and they can beat you so many different ways. So is it the best Alabama team? I wouldn't go that far, but I think the difference between Alabama and the rest of the league might be as great as it's been. I'm looking forward to the Alabama-Florida SEC championship game. I think Florida can score some points on them, but we've seen Florida's defensive vulnerabilities. There's no doubt Alabama will score a ton of points in that game.
Mitch Light here with us from The Athletic, joins us every week after Coach Fitch. We're all going to ask you Vanderbilt questions, apparently.
That's fine. And by the way, going from Mitch after Mason to Mitch after Fitch, do you need you guys to talk to Candace Lee about getting this one coached so we can go? My name kind of blends with that. That might be a factor.
I've already sent the email to her office about that. We have to make sure that the alliteration is all there. So
I'm sure that's a very high priority. Yeah,
it is. I think it should be. So I'm going to try and sell you on a candidate that that you haven't brought up, and I want you to just give me your opinion. The only, I guess the biggest knock is he's never been in a college coach. Former NFL coach, has moved two teams, so has dealt with a unique situation. You probably already know where I'm going with this. Has dealt with a unique situation, which
Mitch
we
after
all,
Fish.
Bill Parcells.
That works.
Mitch after Fish. There you go. We got that, the guy.
That works. But he also knows how to navigate those type waters because Vanderbilt is such a unique job. And in a sense, Jeff Fisher has nothing to lose. He's accomplished a lot in his career. He's made his money. He's also hungry because he misses coaching, wants to get in the game. He's expressed that before. It's the reports have been out there that he was interested in Vanderbilt a couple of years ago. So why not? Because of knowing what kind of salesman he can be, which is what that program needs.
I don't think the one thing that way, and this might not be fair to Coach Fisher, but the way you sold it is he's got nothing to lose. I don't know if I want to coach you with nothing to lose. Like, and I'll answer the question better in a minute, but do I want to hire a coach who's like, sounds like it's a good idea, then after a year and a half in, he says, you know, it's not what I thought, and then, you know, he's already made all his money.
Yeah, I think you have a Rod Dowhower image that pops in your head. Like, he had already accomplished a lot, so, you know, his legacy is not going to swing on whether he does well in this particular spot. I get that argument.
Yeah, so Chase, I guess my point would be if the pool of candidates weren't so attractive or that I found so attractive, I would consider it more. I don't think it would be the worst thing by any stretch. I do think he's a good football coach, and I've talked to some people about this too. You know, the Dowhower staff brought in a lot of NFL guys. Woody became the head coach. They developed some very good players. Go look at that late 90s, especially on defense. They coached those guys up. They developed them, a lot of future NFL players, and they had some pretty good teams. So I know it's a different era, different coaches, but you can't just say, oh, he's an NFL coach. You can't coach college kids. I thought those guys did a good job coaching. But, again, I'll just go back to the – I think there's better candidates, guys who have been college head coaches, hungrier, recruited more. They've been in the recruiting game. So it's not – I wouldn't be in my top 8 or 10, but if the pool of candidates weren't as great, I think someone – you know, if it were my decision, I would consider in certain instances.
Well, if it was a Tennessee search, then he'd be right in the thick of things if he was around 8 or 10 on the list, right? Is that what you're saying?
No comment.
Okay.
How do you think that, you know, and obviously it changes day by day, but Ohio State, and they've missed some games, and if they miss more and they can't be in the Big Ten championship game, how do you think that the committee should handle that when they're coming up with their four?
Yeah, I'll give a good plug. Ari Wasserman and Bill Landis on our staff, both covered Ohio State for a long time, have a good counterpoint on our site about that today, addressing that very topic about how many games. And there looks like there's some good news coming out of Ohio State today. They're returning to activity, so there's some optimism that they'll be able to play Michigan State this week. One thing to consider is if they don't make the Big Ten championship game and they end up playing Wisconsin instead of Northwestern, yeah, they won't have a quote-unquote championship trophy, but playing Wisconsin at that point in the season might be perceived as a better win, better opportunity than playing Northwestern. So I think if they play this week, and if they get up to six games, they're fine. If for some reason this game gets canceled and the Michigan game gets canceled and they ended up playing four games or five games, you know, then you get dicey. It's a slippery slope with the committee. They're trying to pick the four best teams. How much do you – if Ohio State's played four games, do you penalize them for not playing Illinois, a team that they're going to beat by 30 points anyway? Or you'd think, like, how much would you learn by them playing Illinois? So there's a lot of things to factor. I think Ohio State will end up being in the playoff. I do think they're one of the best four teams, but I think you really need to watch what happens this week. I think if they get this game in, because they're 4-0, right? I think they're 4-0. If they get this game in, that's five, and then no matter what happens with Michigan, who's having its problems, they can get that championship weekend game in, and that gets them to six, and I think they'd be in really good shape.
I think we need to get Mitch After Fitch sponsored by the Nintendo Switch. Just really keep it going. I think that that would really that would that
you've got,
work
you've got
out.
One more week. You've got one more week for that. So right. So get on.
I'll get on it, Mitch.
If they'll send us product, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure Maddox would be all about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired of spending money on that stuff. So yeah, I'll be all for it.
Mitch, we appreciate it as always, and we'll do it again next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care.
Mitch Light, The Athletic, joining us every Tuesday. We'll come back, wrap up the show next. But, Darren, first, you have a word.
A little college hoops. Texas and Indiana right now playing 33-21. Tejas, early second half. Yeah, very low-scoring affair. Gonzaga and Baylor. Yeah, they're about ready to go toe-to-toe, maybe for the top ranking in college basketball. By the way, a lot of big matchups tonight. Michigan State and Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, and don't forget about Gonzaga and Baylor. And DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is going to give you college basketball fans who sign up right now the chance to win $100 when you bet on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win this big matchup. And plus, you'll get a deposit bonus up to $1,000 when you sign up and use the promo code 1025GAME. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, all you have to do is bet $1. And you can turn that $1 into $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win the game. But you must use the code 1025GAME during the sign-up process for a limited time. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Bonus is comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. You must see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you're someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.